Supervisors, please take your seats. All right, I call the meeting to order. It is 6 o'clock, and if you are here, please check in on the computer. While people are doing that, what I want to pass around is the sign-up sheet for the WCA magazine. This shows whether you have been getting it this year, and you can mark whether you want to get it again next year or not. If you don't get it, we always have one at the office. You're welcome to take a look at it there. It saves us $20 a year for everybody who does not get the magazine, so keep that in mind as you sign up. While we're waiting for that to complete, I'm going to embarrass her and note that my niece, Haley Doyle, is here watching us for her school stuff, and try not to embarrass me in front of her, okay? Yeah, I'm good at that myself. We ready there? Tara Johnson, we're waiting for you.
And I appreciate it.
And you don't care. No, I'm beyond that. We have 31 people so far. That is a quorum. Let's continue with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, next on the agenda is the chair's report. I only have a couple things. One is we need a county board member volunteer for MTU. Bev has expressed some interest in that, but if anybody else wants to try to bump her aside, talk to me, I guess. Otherwise, we may have that one covered already. Supervisor conference reports. Anybody have anything? Arlene Benrood, of course.
Thank you. I only have three.
Slacking off this month, huh?
Okay. The first one was Monday, November 16th, a meeting for Wisconsin County Highway Association, the Board of Directors, which I'm vice chair of the executive committee. We met at the Chula Vista and went through that because we are going to be moving our conference there within a couple years. And we toured it. It's a $200 million expansion, 700 guest rooms, suites and condos, 25 meeting rooms, 80,000 square feet of multi-level indoor water park, 5 bars and lounge, and a new market fresh buffet and a very nice golf course. So in a couple of years, that's where we will be going.
We're not going
to
ask which of those amenities is what really attracted your group to go to there.
Really? Well, just in case they want to pop in, they can use my name. I'll get them in.
All right.
Okay. The next one was IPEC, the monthly meeting Friday, December 4th. Was in Toma at the teepee. 24 attended. There's no charge for the room as long as we eat there. We made arrangements for the governor's conference in Milwaukee, 3 days in March. I chair the tourism committee and Jerry Sobranik's vice chair. We're taking the train down and back, and there's no charge to the county. Okay, one, two. The next one was Thursday, December 10th. We met in Wausau to go over our executive director's contract, and everything was approved. And it's Jerry Sobranik's birthday today. He's 72, and he's not here because of health reasons. I had picked up a cake, was going to surprise him, but he called at work and said he wasn't coming. So I have some cupcakes I'm going to pass around, and I dropped the cake off over to his house because it's a huge cake, and I don't want to eat it. So anyway, I will tell him that everybody...
Tell him happy birthday for us.
I will do that.
We're not going to sing it, though.
No, okay, because I can't sing either. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Arlene. Other conference reports, Bridget Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I attended the Wisconsin Counties Association Judicial and Public Safety Steering Committee meeting on Wednesday, December 2nd. We discussed several items. Bob Anderson from Legal Action of Wisconsin was there speaking in favor of AB 524, which raises the small claims to $10,000 unless the person has commenced over 20 claims, and it also raises the fees. Objections all over the place on that one because many of the people who are involved in this, are stakeholders in this, have differing opinions on it, and the Wisconsin County Association has no idea whether they're going to. Well, they have an idea. They'll probably oppose this. There was also somebody from the sex offender programs in the DOC, Melissa Roberts, speaking against residency requirements for sex offenders. The steering committee passed a resolution asking for statewide law against residency requirements, and the resolution will be forwarded to the board of directors. And we discussed the Judicial and Public Safety Committee platform, and we'll be taking action on that on our next meeting.
Thank you, Bridget. Any other conference reports? I have one thing to mention before we go into the administrator's report, and that is the issue that's gotten a lot of attention over the last few days, the state's state legislature passing the new drunk driving law. That is going to have some significant repercussions to counties, perhaps not La Crosse County as much as some, because we are going to be able to continue our OWI court. But what the legislature did in approving the bill, they wanted to have it at least partially funded. It's not completely funded under any scenario, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, but they wanted to come up with some money through increased fines. The way that the system presently works is that when a person pays a fine, 80% of it goes to the state, and we only keep 20. Well, they changed it now for those drunk driving fines. 93-point-something% will go to the state, and we get only about 6%. So we're going to have a lot more people in our county jails, but not any more money. Fortunately, we have our OWI court, which is going to help us a little bit. But I think in talking with the judges and people in the system, the expectation is that people who are now going to be convicted of felonies for whatever it is, fourth offense, drunk driving, even though a felony can send you to prison, they're more likely to end up getting, say, a year in the county jail. So they will be our expense, and there is no money coming to pay for that. The counties that don't have a program like ours, they're going to take a huge financial hit. But I do want to single out Jennifer Schilling. We had talked to her pretty much every day in the days leading up to this, and she made sure that we got a memo from the Legislative Council saying that our OWI program, our OWI court, is acceptable under the new law. So we feel pretty comfortable about that, and we appreciate her efforts in that regard. I think that's it for my report. Let's go on to the administrator's report.
Okay, I do have a few things. First of all, Jim Spropoulos has a sign-up sheet that we're going to pass around about the jail tours. I will point out, and again, we apologize when we do put things on your desk, but sometimes we need to. The meeting schedule that you have on your desk, there is one mistake, poor communication between myself and Terry. The Public Works and Infrastructure meeting is going to be January 7th, not January 11th. Public Works moved their meeting because of conflict with, I think it was the Highway Conference. And so Jim is passing around the sign-up sheet, and he just talked to Vicki Burke regarding the schedule of the LEC Construction Committee. We're going to try to move that to 4:30. So if you've got the blue sheet and you want to make notes on that, if you're going to Public Works, it's on January 7th, and the LEC Construction Committee would be at 4:30 to accommodate the tour schedule that Jim is going to pass around while I do the rest of my report. Okay? A couple of other quick items to update you on. You remember earlier this year you adopted the NACO prescription drug program. That information now, we've finally gotten all the approvals from NACO. Included on your desk is actually an information handout that you can have if you want to share with constituents any of the information about the NACO prescription card. Just a reminder, what it means is that anyone can use it at all the local pharmacies. It will be available as a program in January 4th. The information is all here, as well as if you want cards to distribute to any of your constituents, we've got a whole package over here. I won't hand them out just in case you all don't want them, but they're individual cards. They work just like any kind of discount card at a pharmacy. NACO will be notifying all of our local pharmacies. It's not unusual to have these types of things where NACO and Caremark are being are providing these discounts all across the country. Periodically, we'll get reports on who's actually saving money or the total amount of money that's being saved, and it's a great program. I know you were very supportive of adopting that. On the back of this, by the way, if you don't immediately have access to the cards, on the back are the roughly 13 different locations where people can pick up cards. So again, if we have plenty of cards, don't feel bashful. They're over here in these packets, so just feel free to grab a few. Again, the health department will have those for folks as we go about that, and there will be more information. We've already gotten interest from a number of the local media sources about promoting it. So again, it's part of our advantage of being a part of NACO is this discount drug program. I'll see if there are any questions about that. I know Sharon.
Steve, I have
one.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If a person has insurance, this discount card won't affect your, it won't reduce your copay or anything, I assume, will it?
It can save money as well. So you can use it, and they'll always, generally the pharmacy will always give you the best discount that you have. With our prescription drug program, we're saving quite a bit on the discounts, but it can't hurt to use it and ask. They'll tell you whether or not it actually helps your individual prescription.
Okay.
My understanding is that pharmacies are used to, there are various groups that have discount cards like this, ARP and other organizations, unions do this sometimes, but the National Association of Counties has opened this through Caremark to any resident of any county that sponsors the program. And I think about 30, Sharon, is it 30 or 40 counties in this state are already doing that? And you can actually go online if you're interested in what's happening. You can go on the NACO website. I believe the website is listed there at the bottom and learn more about that. So feel free. And if you're not sure, just refer them to me or the health department, and you can learn more about it for your constituents.
Don Bina.
I don't believe so. I think what will happen at a pharmacy is they'll give you the best one that they're able to, so whichever it gives the best discount.
And if I took some of the cards, and I know some people who might want them, do I need to get you back to you the name and address?
Nope.
And telephone number?
All they need is the card. They don't need to register. They can just go ahead and use that when they go to the pharmacy. And again, NACO and Caremark are notifying our local pharmacies. They're used to this type of thing. So it's actually pretty easily administered. We don't have to do a lot of work other than sponsor it because we're a NACO member. Okay?
Any other questions on this topic? All right.
The next item, if you didn't notice in your monthly report, remember every month we do a monthly report covering about half the departments, and the next month we do another half. I pointed out, and Hank is here. Hank and the and our sustainability coordinator have been working on a request for interest, an RFI for biogas utilization at the La Crosse County landfill. Nick, working with Hank, got a Focus on Energy grant to pay for part of the study analyzing the utilization of biogas at the landfill. It will be viable under a number of circumstances, at least under the preliminary analysis. So what we started out with is a request for interest. That's different than a request for proposal because we don't know how many parties might be interested. You obviously know that Gunderson has some experience in doing biogas reclamation over at the brewery. They've expressed some interest. So we're just doing an RFI so we don't put everybody through building a whole proposal, and then we'll keep you up to date if we get that interest. Obviously, it will come through the governing committee, Public Works, as we go about this process. So again, it's pretty exciting. It would be a chance for us to have another form of alternative energy in addition to waste energy that we could access, and Hank and Nick have been leading the charge on that. So I just wanted to highlight that because you may hear talk about it. We want to make sure that we are as open as possible to any other proposers, but you know, another good business and community partner like Gunderson is also interested in discussing this with us. So we'll keep you up to date on that. Now, the last item will take a few minutes, but I this is a learning opportunity for both me and for you on our budget. It was really interesting. About half of you as supervisors probably haven't gotten a lot of questions about your property tax bill, and about another half of you are probably getting quite a few questions. I've seen a couple of emails come across, and so under the budget summary, I want to talk about a couple things, but I want to talk about something that you're going to think initially, other than Chuck Spiker, is boring. It's called apportionment. And I'm going to give you into some of the details because Chuck's the only one that ever asks us about this. So first of all, I just want to point out, in your lockers, if you haven't picked them up yet, is a budget summary document. Now, what we did was, instead of most years where we take this entire document that you get and then reprint every line item, we decided to save some trees and ask you to just get by with the summary, because you've already gotten the line items. If you want to refer back to any of those, you have the detail of what changed in here, as well as all of the public hearing information, the comparisons that we've done, the line items you changed, the tax levy information, and I'm go through just a couple of those, and then it gets to apportionment. Because what we end up talking about is how do property taxes impact individual property owners. When you're talking to a constituent, when you pull your property tax bill, you're going, well, we did a whole lot of work on the budget. What is the impact on our individual taxes? And remember, I've talked about, and Mary and Gary have talked about this before, is that it's all very complicated. It's very hard to tell you what's going to happen to your individual tax bill when we adopt our budget until after the equalized value formula is done. And tonight, we're going to actually walk through probably, this is probably the simplest way we can explain it, and there are a couple of advantages to that. So I just want to go through that the, if that is going to work, could you do page up? There we go. Just a reminder of all the data is included there, and you can get all the detailed spreadsheets if you want it. We continue to be the fifth lowest county in per capita total spending. We continue to have one of the lowest tax levies, as I've talked about, compared to similar counties of similar size. And yet, this year, we had the lowest increase in property taxes in 10 years. The lowest increase in the past 10 years, that's not adjusted for inflation, that's absolute dollars, 2.6%. So why, in some of the communities, are we seeing increases on their county portion of 5 and 6% and other county people seeing decreases? That's what we're going to try to explain tonight. You also saw that the rate changed just slightly. So the first thing I want to do is, if you pick up this one pager, it's just a two-sided handout. Again, I apologize for putting it on your desk, but I just finished it this afternoon working with finance and trying to put this together. In essence, at the top of the page, we talk about that individual county taxes, individual properties are affected by four main factors. Total tax base change in the county, how much the total value of the county changed from one year to the next. Remember that big graph I showed you the history? What actually happens to the whole tax base? Number two, what you actually set for an increase or a change in tax levy. If the tax levy goes up, what the impact is. If the tax levy goes down, what that impact is. Number three is apportionment among the 18 municipalities, something we've spent hardly any time on ever, other than Chuck asking for the graph each year. And last but not least is the one that a lot of people focus on, is the assessed value of their property. Gee, did the assessor increase the value of my property? What's going to happen? And I'm going to show you examples with your own tax bills that answers every one of these questions and ends up giving you some data that you can share with your constituents. So the first thing that I want to walk through is those first 2 points, number one and number two. This year is probably the easiest way to explain something is our total tax base, remember, went up 2.3%. That's almost identical to the amount that your taxes went up for county. In other words, we only let the budget go up 2.6%. 2.3%, 2.6% on a budget this size and on $7 billion, $7.7 billion worth of value, that's almost like no difference. I mean, they're so close. And on top of that, most of that increase in new value was new construction. So in theory, it ought to be all new customers, new value, not appreciation in homes. So we ought to see almost no change in taxes on the county line item. And I'm going to show you how that happens, but how it doesn't happen compared to each individual home. It's in the apportionment. So if you look down on this page, and that's actually the slide that's up there, this is the change in apportionment or share of county tax paid by each municipality. Now, your eyes are going to glaze over when you first see it, but just bear with me. At the top is the city of La Crosse. and you see a big red minus 7 or 0.76. And down at the bottom, there's another city that's pretty famous in this county called the City of Onalaska, which is not in red. It's a black number, which is 0.7. Historically, La Crosse has always been a larger share of our property tax base than it is currently. And I'm going to show you that in a moment as well. But in essence, if you get any one number out of this, by dropping almost one full percentage as the share of taxes for the county paid for by the City of La Crosse, it's almost entirely shifted directly to the City of Onalaska, because those are the two biggest cities in our community. Now, depending on which other municipality you come from, you may or may not see a part of that shift, but that's the biggest shift going on. You also see then Holman, Hamilton, Madary, Barrie, and Bangor. Each one of those also have a red number because their share of the county property tax bill declined this year because of the equalized value and how the Department of Revenue figures that out. While all those municipalities at the bottom coming from reverse, Town of Onalaska, Shelby, West Salem, and Farmington all saw a greater share of increase. If you go to the right, that's actually a description of equalized value, not true value. That's where you take the $7.7 billion of actual market value in this community, the total tax base, go through the formula at the state, and come up with something called equalized value. Because again, we've heard people talk about how all assessments aren't up to date. Many folks have not had a reassessment for quite a while. So the Department of Revenue has to go through all this formula and change that. It doesn't completely change it. I mean, City of Onalaska is obviously growing more in value than the City of La Crosse percentage-wise. So it's not all explained away by the equalized value formula, but this is actually what's happening across the county right now as we continue to have a march of increased value outside the City of La Crosse, other changes in value happening, and anytime you have that big a change in the City of La Crosse, which is our largest city, it directly impacts everybody else. So I'm going to show you how that happens in your own tax bills. This also is the history. This isn't something that just happened this year. I asked finance to go back into the archives and actually see that back in 1989, City of La Crosse was over 50% of your total tax base. Today, for taxes payable 2010, it's just under 36%. So anything we need to operate, again, this is just for county taxes, right? Because we take county taxes and spread it out over the whole county. No matter which school district you're in, no matter which municipality, we spread it out as appropriately and fairly as possible. But when you change the share that an individual municipality picks up, it shifts it elsewhere, right? And that's what's actually happening. So if you go to the bottom of that page, and I didn't put your district numbers or names here, but if you have a chance, you can probably figure out some of them. Right, Leon? Yep. Leon and I have visited about this, so I'm not surprising him with this, as well as Steve and I have visited. At the top are all the 13 county board supervisors that actually saw increases in their taxes this year, and the 19 that saw decreases. By the way, there was one tax bill not yet done, and two of our supervisors are renters, so they didn't have a property tax bill that I could find. But 13 saw increases: City of Onalaska, Towns of Onalaska, Farmington, Shelby, Washington, Campbell, Holland, Village of West Salem. 19 saw decreases: City of La Crosse, Towns of Hamilton, Madary, Village of Holman. And the total tax bill, county portion only, that these 32 supervisors paid in 2008 was $20,542. In 2008 for taxes payable 2009. For 2009, payable next year, you will pay $21,014. Only an increase of 2.3%. So what are people complaining about? Well, some people are paying a lot more, aren't they? The people that live outside the City of La Crosse are picking up the part that is shifted outside the City of La Crosse. If you're in the City of La Crosse, you saw an average of a 0.4 decrease and probably no change in your assessed value. Now I'm going to get into some level of detail of where some of the larger changes are, because at the top, the largest individual that saw an increase, or the largest increase in his tax, went up because his total value went up by 39% due to a reassessment because of some improvements to his home. Also, Farmington, this particular individual, saw an increase in his share of the tax bill. His town's share of the tax bill picked up more. So he ends up winning as paying more tax increase next year than any other supervisor. In second place is another individual in the town of Onalaska that unfortunately saw an increase in the value on his property, went up in value because of an improvement. I believe it was a barn or something that happened, but also was in the town of Onalaska where they were picking up more share. So unlike the other property owner in town of Onalaska that only saw a 3.7% increase, this individual saw more because the value also went up. You go through all the rest of those that see an increase in taxes, they didn't see an increase in their assessed value, so there was no shift. There was no improvement. There was nobody saying that this property should be taxed at a higher value because, again, the market's pretty stagnant, right, for sale of property. So basically, assessors are saying things are pretty flat. Now let's go down to the lower part. You notice that almost everybody in the lower part, the ones that saw decreases, saw no value change, except for a couple. There's one in Holman that saw a 32% increase in his value. Okay? But why didn't his taxes go up? Well, guess what? All the values in Holman went up pretty similar. So they did a reassessment. Remember, I've said before on assessment, if your value goes up more than your neighbor's, you're going to see an increase in taxes. If your value goes up at the same percentage as your neighbors in your municipality, that's not going to affect you. It's affecting you more by the apportionment or the share that your municipality picks up of the county tax bill. So if we keep going through that, you notice that in Madary, the supervisor from there saw no value change. Madary actually lost share of their, not didn't lose value, but lost share compared to the amount of growth in value in the others. Let me go to another one. There was a city supervisor that saw a slight decrease, more than the 0.4, because this individual actually had a reassessment of the property where there was a slight change in their value. Everybody else saw the same assessed value. This individual didn't. And the last two then, in Hamilton, they saw a decrease in Hamilton's share of the county taxes substantially. And in fact, the winner on the other end was a supervisor from Hamilton that saved $50 on county taxes. Now, that gentleman, I actually, two years ago, when it went up $2, I gave him the $2. So I'd like that two bucks back. You don't have to give me the whole 50, but I'd like the $2 back. So what
the moral of the story is to be the biggest whiner, basically.
And what's interesting about this is Chairman Doyle owns a property for his business in La Crosse. He saw exactly the same thing that you from City of La Crosse saw on your home, a 0.4 decrease. He saved a couple bucks on the county taxes, but he happens to be one of the winners on the other side, living in town of Onalaska, where he saw a lot bigger increase in his county taxes up at the top. I believe he's supervisor number two there, seeing a $73 increase in his county share of taxes. He also happens to be in a school district that also saw another big increase, so he didn't win on both ends. So what I want to summarize, and I hope this makes more sense than some of the information we've tried to give you, because property taxes are very complicated, but this is the best year to learn about property taxes because the total tax base, the value of the whole county, went up at about the same rate that we increased our spending. That 2.6% is almost identical to the 2.3%. So any effect on the rest of your actual individual tax bills, and you're great representatives of this entire county, is affected by those other two things. An increase in apportionment, your share of the taxes as a municipality versus the others, and secondly, what happened to your own individual value. If all of your neighbors and you, your value didn't increase, you're probably paying the same thing. And if you're in the city of La Crosse that is basically shedding share of county taxes, because it's not that you're not growing at all, it's just you're not growing as fast in value as others, or some of the value in new construction is in a TIF district and not captured here. Okay, so there are a number of different reasons. And again, this isn't a policy discussion as much as trying to describe what's actually happening because, and I'll just go back to one summary here, the total county taxes paid by the supervisors that I've just described only went up 2%. but it's who paid the 2% and who didn't. And frankly, if the Farmington supervisor hadn't improved his property, if we just took that out of the mix, the total county taxes by county supervisors went up less than 1%. Back to what I said earlier, if our taxes for county levy goes up about the same as total value, we ought to see almost no change in taxes. And that's why previously, historically, we were able to keep the tax rate down because the value of the county was going faster than our raise in spending. So I'll take any questions, but I'm hoping that that's helpful in understanding what the impact. Now, I've also got Gary here if the questions get any more complicated.
Chuck Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like if you can explain this because nobody has been able to explain it to me. The village of Holman dropped $6 million in equalized valuation. The townships that went up, Holman's always had a steady growth rate. Why would it drop $6 million in equalized valuation for the village?
You know,
I couldn't get an answer at the state. I couldn't get an, I think Maryland
We can look into it and see if we can find a better answer. But the shifts, because you remember if I did the same presentation last year and I didn't, your county share of property taxes actually went up last year because that was one of the things we were talking about with apportionment. Why that kind of fluctuation?
Yeah.
It, you know, it seems to me that part of it is that this system of assessment that we have that it is so inefficient doesn't allow us to easily explain and keep people's property as close to true market value as it is. And this is an illustration of that. Now, if we went to a system of fair assessment, I don't know that it would solve everything, but it would certainly let us know with our eyes wide open what changes from year to year much easier than the current system. Because if you go back, can you page back just two? Whoops. You see over here on the right that 10.82, 10.87, 1. You know that those columns. That's not total value. That says that for tax purposes, the city of La Crosse, the formula comes out to be 10.8 million. You know what the city of La Crosse really is worth? 2.9 billion. That's a B. The formula of equalized value takes all those billions and comes up with a formula to try to equalize everything. That's what equalized value is. And they have a whole group of people in Madison that do that.
Well,
because it's
one,
trying to adjust.
That's
it.
The one I was trying to talk to. They come out. They have to have that to the counties by August 15th. Have to have it to the school districts. I believe it's October, but they can't explain how they come up with the equal valuation. My question was, why did Holman drop $6 million?
We'll look into it and see if we can come up with a better answer. But I don't know every district. I don't know if Jeff knows. Jeff, do you know why they dropped $6 million? Uh-oh, here we go. Get the property lister. He actually does this stuff for a living. So. He doesn't know? Okay. He wouldn't tell you?
Well, the equalization process, as you've heard, is real complicated. But what happens is if the assessors don't turn their information in by June 15th, the state only has 2 months to equalize the values. You are right that the equalized values have to be calculated by August 15th, because that's used for the county, but they also use that for the school districts. And if the assessor isn't done with their job, what ends up happening, the state is required to estimate the value of the municipality. So if they don't have the numbers that are turned in, it's an estimate. So if they end up estimating too high, any municipality, they have to make up that difference next year by dropping it. Okay, and if they estimate too low, they have to end up increasing it. So this analysis that would have to be done, we would have to go back and see when all the reports were turned in and when they were finally turned in. Okay.
Other questions? Leon Paff.
Don't go too far. I'm just, when you work on that equally, what is the fair market value number on there, does that have any real meaning at all, or is that just giving you information?
Okay. Every single year, when a piece of property is sold, and let's say every piece of property that you guys own right now is sold, what happens is when there's a transfer return form is attached to that deed, What the state does is, because my department ends up giving the state a copy of the assessment roll when it's finished. So a good example is, if your house sold for $100,000, they take a look at that, the assessment that's in the assessment roll, and let's say it's $80,000. That represents 80%. That's what that level of assessment is trying to tell you, but it's an average of residential, commercial, manufacturing, and ag land. So each one of those major classes have their own sales. So that presentation that Carl Green gave to everybody that indicated all these sales, none of them are all going to average 80%. Some are going to be at 75%, some are going to be at 95%, some are going to be at 60%. So that thing that's on the tax bill is only an average of all of them. So the state says, this is your tax bill, it's going to be called full disclosure now. All we do is divide that level of assessment into your total assessed value to bring it up to an average, equalized or full value. It's just a representation. It doesn't mean anything. It's not even used for apportionment because it's an average too. Maybe I'm not close enough here.
Tanbina.
Then you're really confusing it now, because you're the guy that's saying you want 100% of true value.
That's right.
How the state can't even figure out what true value is, because they are taking the average, which you just said, and that doesn't make it 100% of true.
Nope.
So what is true value? I'm going to keep on asking that question, because just because an appraiser comes to my place and says that you're valued at that, whatever that dollar figure is, it's his guesstimate. But that guy that comes to my place and assesses is trained by the state, just like every other assessor, and he comes and he assesses the land based on his best knowledge. And where do you find 100% of true value? The state, in its infinite wisdom, is guessing at everything too.
Well, the state gets every single sale, but they're working on sales that are always a year old.
You're right.
Okay.
I agree with that.
The assessment roll are all sales that happened last year. Okay. So what ends up happening, in order to get to 100%, and the City of La Crosse has been trying to do this for years, they have a full-time staff.
Right.
Other municipalities have part-time people that don't take a look at the sales like the City of La Crosse does. The City of La Crosse actually works 20% of all the property in the city every single year.
I would agree.
So when they get these sales that represent 80%, they raise all the comparable pieces of property that look just like this, square footage, everything, they work that, and they change them every year. So they're staying as close to 100% as they can.
You're right.
The other municipalities that aren't working these sales stay at 80%, 76% before they're ordered to do something. So those municipalities that don't have, that aren't close to 100%, it's harder even to estimate, because you're not working with real numbers.
Well, there haven't been a lot of actual sales out in the countryside either, and you got nothing to compare to. My neighbor just sold his farm for $1.3 million. I don't know what that's going to do to my farm this next year.
It won't do anything, because the farms are assessed at soil productivity, which is use.
And that's the other point I was going to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my house in town got reevaluated last year on Weston Street, and it went up $250, but this year it stayed the same.
Well,
basically, but I'm still paying on a one bedroom house, I'm paying $350 more than I got a 160 acre farm. But you can't compare farming to houses either. So
This would be a good discussion for an all night.
All night.
lock the doors.
But
and
not
put your
this
pants
night.
On.
Monica Cruz.
Is there a direct relationship between the equalized value when it rises? Does the equalized aid that we get per student in our districts, does that rise as well? Is there a relationship or not? I mean, if we're paying out more, are we at least...
Charlie Handy is nodding his head yes back there.
No,
Yeah, but I don't know about school financing.
Okay. Just wondering if we're getting, you know, more money back on another end to sort of...
Well, and Monica, this whole presentation basically came partly, and I'll be forwarding it on to the constituent that was asking questions,
right. mm-hmm.
of what's happening in the city of Onalaska.
Right.
This illustrates exactly why that change mm-hmm. happened for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, I understood mm-hmm. that. Thank you.
Tammy Gameroth.
I pay property taxes in Bangor. Why is Bangor not listed on here?
They don't have your tax bill out yet, Tammy. You're the only one that we couldn't find a tax bill for, so it wasn't up to date. So
that means you don't have to pay this year.
I think your bill will go out, and the equalized value is described there for the change for Bangor, but I didn't have a tax bill.
Joe Veenstra.
Thank you. I was curious about the Supervisor Johnson and I are both curious about if we capture the TIF revenues that aren't included, would the city's percentage be different? And if you know, how much would it be?
We've looked at that before. It would be, but it's unfair to actually say that because the development wouldn't be there were it not for TIF. There is no business today that will expand or build anywhere without their hand up on a large scale. And that's what TIF districts do, is the cities use them. We do it in the Village of West Salem. We put in the infrastructure jointly with the West Salem to attract the business. We've had that experience. So we could get that number. I don't know if you have the – do you know the total TIF value? Not right now, but we can get you that number. So in theory, yes, if all of that was not in a TIF district, but then you'd also have to believe that all of that development would have happened without the city putting in the utilities, putting in the infrastructure, buying out the properties that allowed the development to happen in a number of cases. Some of it's philosophical, but in theory, TIF should only happen but for the TIF district. So, yes, there is value there, which is why, as a county, we ought to have interest in how many TIF districts there are, because we're not getting that value, and this is an example of that. But you can argue both sides. I've worked for cities and counties, so it's... Sorry, that was a long answer. I don't have the details.
Other questions, Vicki Burke?
It isn't about this, Mr. Chairman, but the sheet that's going around with the jail construction tour, when the numbers are filled up under a particular time, is that the number of people that they just want on that tour, right? I mean, I don't want people, if it isn't, they're writing their name on the other side. Because
yeah.
one of them
is Jim's the tour guide, so...
If it's filled up, just sign up next to it.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm trying to keep the groups as small as I can, but if there's 10 or 12, okay. that's not going to matter. The other thing that I wanted to mention that I didn't earlier is we're going to meet on the south end of the new campus garage, the new garage behind D's. So we'll meet on the south end there, tour that building, and then walk over to the main building. So, thank you.
Ralph Geary.
Well, just a lot of impressive information, but... Gary might have a better historical analysis of this. Historically, haven't we always been low? We've always been low. And why have we always been low? La Crosse, Eau Claire is one of our comparables. We're always on the bottom. La Crosse and Eau Claire pay maybe 85-90% of the state average. If you listed our comparables, the ones that are paying 110% of the state average were in the eastern part of the state, I'm sure their taxes are probably proportionally different. When we instituted the sales tax and developed that policy where we'd build up our surplus funds, Gary remembers that we used to have low balances there, right? And we raised it significantly. What'd that do? Lowered our bond rating a couple times, or two or three maybe, and now we've got a lot more money where we get interest in income that we didn't have before. So when I look at all this stuff, I'm thinking, that's pretty impressive. But what's your point? We've always been low. I mean, we should be low just due to the area we live in. We shouldn't be high. We should be low. Eau Claire should be low. That's what we should compare to, income levels, you know,
sure. No,
eastern part of the state, western part of the state.
Sure, and Eau Claire has the same responsibilities as we do, and they're the only county of similar size that taxes less. Every other county of similar size taxes more, and out of 72 counties, we're the fifth lowest, partly because historically we've always been low.
Right.
And so it's this county board and administration that tries to preserve that and still provide the same number of services that every other county. We don't get a free pass, and they say, because you spend less, you get to provide less service. We have the same mandates, the same responsibility, and I think we do it better than nearly any other county in the state. But that's historical. That's not just during this county board's term. You're exactly right. Historically, we've done it better. We've done it more cost-effectively. But we think it's important to give you the information so you actually know what that comparison is. And frankly, Eau Claire doesn't do all the innovative services that we do.
Yeah.
They spend less because I believe they provide less.
My point was the income levels in La Crosse and Eau Claire are lower than all our comparables. We're probably the bottom two. We're on the western part of the state.
That I don't know. I think our MSA is doing pretty well, isn't it, Bill? Our Metropolitan Statistical District is doing, at least on unemployment, we're doing as well as any in the state except for Madison.
Yeah, we have the second lowest unemployment rate in the state.
Yeah. We're a pretty strong economy comparatively.
All the counties are under binding arbitration. And when we go to binding arbitration, one of the arguments Mr. Taunt would always use was La Crosse pays less, like the city, the county. We pay less. So that's an argument about why we should pay our workers a little less. The people, the unions and the top of our comparables are arguing, why are we paying so much? Their unions are arguing, because everybody else in this area is paying so much. And binding arbitration almost locks you into position. You know that thing? It almost locks you in, because wherever you were when binding arbitration started, if you're pretty well going to stay there. So, I mean, it's impressive, but like I said, I think we belong there.
Just impressive, but you're not impressed.
Impressive. Okay. That's like something I've... impressive, but, you know, it's like nothing changed. Mr. Brockmiller maybe could someday give us a presentation on our income levels compared to the other income levels.
John Menninger, did you have your hand up?
I was going to raise a point of information that this really should be... This is fascinating and interesting, but it really ought to be at a policy meeting. We keep jazzing these things up between policy and this meeting, and this is... I'd like to talk about this, too, but we have an agenda... This is wonderful, interesting stuff.
Yeah, and again, I apologize before I did it, but I've got board members that are getting emails from constituents, and if this wouldn't have lasted till January, and I thought you're getting information saying that we have low taxes, but people are saying, well, why is my tax bill going up 5 or 6%? So, again, I apologize, but I just thought it was as timely as it could be because individual board members are getting those questions. You're not getting them if you're a supervisor in La Crosse. You're probably not getting complaints about the county share of taxes, so sorry about that.
Any other questions on the budget? All right, let's go on to cards and correspondence. Check the board over there. Committee meetings during recess, there are none, so that gets us to appointments.
Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. December is always the month that we have a lot of appointments, so those are as listed on the agenda. I would ask for approval of those.
Seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion on the appointments listed on the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Any abstentions? Noted that Supervisor Manthei is abstaining from the vote. Motion carries unanimously with that one abstention. Well, I
Thank
guess
you.
It's not unanimous then, is it? It passes with one abstention.
Thank you. It gets us to the consent agenda, moved by Roger Plesha, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Any questions or discussion on the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Planning, Resource, and Development Committee, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll take item 12-20, zoning petition 1824, filed by Keith and Jody Barras to rezone from Agriculture District B with conditions to rezone back to Agriculture District B without conditions of the town of Washington. The committee voted unanimous to approve this. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Mr. Manthei. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1221, zoning petition 1829, filed
by...
Can
you back a little bit away from the microphone?
Okay.
Not too far. Just you're popping a little bit.
I've done that before. Where are we at?
Sorry.
Deborah and Dan Schwer to rezone exclusive agriculture district from agriculture district A in the town of Barrie. The committee voted unanimously to approve this. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion or questions on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1222, zoning petition 1830 by James and Mary Luke to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Washington. The committee voted unanimously to approve this. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Mr. Montai. Any discussion or questions on this one? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
We have item 12-23, zoning position 1831, filed by Eve Zellmer, Capable Canines of Wisconsin, acting on behalf of J Squared Properties, LLC, to remove conditional commercial districts B on the zoning petition from number 1540, allowing only low-volume professional office to be placed in the new condition, allowing only boarding kennel and training facilities in the town of Madary. I move for your approval.
Move by the committee report by Mr. Meyer, which is to approve. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Brockmiller. Discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
We have item 1224, conditional use permit 8804, filed by Alan Radke, to amend conditional use permit number 310 to reflect reduced acreage of storage business known as the bunkhouse storage, to allow additional storage being after the fact outside the storage of recreational vehicles, and to allow the custom woodworking business known as Greenfield Builders on the land zoned Agricultural District A in the town of Greenfield. The committee approved this with the seven conditions listed on your insert in your packet. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, subject to seven conditions, second by Mr. Bina. Any discussion or questions on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1225, zoning petition 1832, filed by Michael and LaVon Hunt, acting on behalf of Monty McGuire, plant manager of Swiss Valley Farms, to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A at the town of Greenfield. I move for approval.
Move for approval by Mr. Meyer. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Kyle. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
All right, items 1226 through 1229 are all termination agreements agreed to by the people that have the permits and the...
Is there any objection to Mr. Meyer handling all four of those at once? Seeing no objection?
All in favor say aye.
No. I like your attitude, though, Don. Why don't you just move for approval of all four of the terminations?
That's where I was headed.
I was asking for unanimous consent so you could do that.
Okay.
Though.
I move for approval of the four termination agreements in your packet.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion on those. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Get you to 12:30, I think.
Yeah. This is resolution 1230. It's approval application for state aids appropriated for the county fish and game management projects. Whereas Wisconsin has enacted legislation providing state aids that are appropriate for fish and game management projects on the condition that the county match the state's share of the projects. Whereas the resolution 84-3/5 in La Crosse County Board approved authorization of La Crosse County Facilities Department to make applications to the state of Wisconsin for funds appropriated for fish and game management projects, and that such additional or authorization shall continue until the resolution is modified by La Crosse County Board. Whereas there is a need to modify the resolution because it is necessary to authorize La Crosse County Board by its Land Conservation Department and UW Extension Services to be an additional or to be authorized to apply for aids allocated by the County Conservation AIDS Program as well, and whereas La Crosse County desires to participate in the county fish and game projects pursuant to the provisions in section 2.3 or 23.09 paragraph 12 Wisconsin statutes. Yeah. Now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize La Crosse County by its Land Conservation Department and UW Extension Department and the Facilities Department to make annual applications to the State of Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for funds appropriated for fish and game projects. Be it further resolved that any grant application for state aids to improve fish and wildlife habitat shall be approved by the County Administrator pursuant to Section 1.16, paragraph 2D of the County Code of La Crosse County Board, authorize the county to match the state's share of the project. Be it further resolved that the authorization by La Crosse County Board shall continue as long as the match aids are available and the county matching funds are provided for an annual budget until the resolution is modified by the County Board. Fiscal state funds are available in 2010 to provide habitat improvements at Gill's Cooley Creek in the amount of $1,321. County matching funds will come from La Crosse Conservation Department in the form of labor materials. The committee approved this unanimously. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer. Is there a second? Seconded by Marilyn Pedretti. Discussion or questions? Mr. Schrader.
Thank you. Does this mean that this goes on year after year?
So it's modified.
Greg, can you come on in? Greg, you heard the question?
Yes.
Glad to have him here.
For any new supervisors, this is Greg Stangle, who is our Land Conservation Director.
Thank you. Yes, this is an annual allocation from the Department of Natural Resources. All counties are eligible to receive the funds and apply for them. Only counties and tribal governments can apply for these funds.
Do you have to use it for the same piece of real estate that every year, or is this?
There's a very
can
long,
you change it?
Yeah, there's a very long list of eligible practices for either fish or game management, and it's very extensive.
But it's not always the same real estate parcel that it has to
be. No,
it
does not have to be.
Yeah, I'd never seen one like this before, so that's why I'm asking these questions.
Well, the money is there, and if we don't apply for it and receive it, it goes into a community pot, and it's redistributed to other counties that request additional monies.
So you can request more if you see the need? Or
sure. If we have a project cost that exceed our allocation, we certainly can submit another application after the first of the year to encumber some of those other funds that are not used by other counties.
Mr. Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doesn't this obligate the county board, future county boards, which I thought we couldn't do for budgetary items?
Mr. Shepherd will answer that one. You heard the question, Bill.
Well, this isn't, we're not spending any tax levy dollars. These are state dollars that are being applied for. So, you know, this is an ongoing authority. It can be rescinded, but basically you're losing out on state dollars that, as Greg has indicated, could be coming for projects in La Crosse County.
No, I'm talking about the county matching funds. Aren't we obligating the county then to match funds in the future?
Well, it says in the fiscal note that those matching funds are labor and materials, which I assume, Greg, you is just from your existing operation.
Yeah, contributions, yes.
And that's always so. That so, in other words, for us to use actual dollars, it would have to come back to us.
Gary, our finance director, is nodding his head. Yes,
we'd
have
Thank
to come
you.
Back here to spend any dollars that are county dollars.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions anybody has or comments? All right, all in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
The next three resolutions are all the same. And I checked with Dave Lang, and he said we agreed I could read this once, and we'll go back and vote on each township as we see fit.
Mr. Meyer, if you want to skip the whereases, you can just do the be it resolved portions if you want to speed it up.
Wow. Okay.
Just trying to be nice to you tonight because it's the holiday season.
You're a wonderful fellow. Don, to be it resolved. Okay, well, the subject of it is to approve town land use maps. And we have to do that, as the first whereas says, in our comprehensive plan. Be it further resolved that the county planner is directed to bring...
No, go up, back up one.
Okay, now therefore be it resolved the La Crosse County Board hereby approves the committee's recommendation that La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan Future Land Use Map is amended to include the land use districts established in the town of Bangor as Exhibit A and as a guide for future developments. Now that would also include Farmington and Hamilton. Be it further resolved, the La Crosse County Planner is directed to bring an ordinance to the County Board as an appropriate time amending La Crosse County Future Land Use Plan, including the land use districts adopted by the town of Bangor and the other two, as approved in the plans and local governments. There's no physical impact in La Crosse County.
All right, let's do it this way. Mr. Meyer is moving approval of 1231, which is the Bangor land use map. Is there a second on that one? Seconded by Mr. Bina. Any discussion on the Bangor land use map? Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. My question would apply to all three of them.
Sure.
But are these, in any of them, is there any significant difference from what we approved in the county one?
Charlie?
Charlie is going to help us.
Thank you.
The county approval did not include any of the towns because they weren't done. We included four towns, basically four municipalities at the time because they were done. At this point, what we've been saying all along is we're sewing together a quilt. These are just three more patches that are being sewn into the quilt. So as far as consistency, there are some changes because they're different from the plan that we adopted as a county in 2001. So, yeah, there are some differences, but these are approved by the town, and that's the way we expected it to be done.
Okay. I suppose my question then would be, are there any significant actions in these plans that are different from what the concept or the goals of the plan?
What you're adopting is the land use maps, not the goals of those towns and the verbiage in their plans. So the answer is no, we're adopting their land use maps. We've looked at all of them, and I don't think you would want the town of Bangor to adopt a land use map that's exactly how Charlie Handy would like to see it. I don't think that's the way it should be. They've adopted it based on their public input and their plan commission's recommendation and their town board's acceptance. So do I agree with everything that they have in their maps? No. Should I? Definitely not.
Okay. Thank you.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Charlie, while you're up there, the ordinance that you're going to bring back that will amend the county's map will do what? I mean, just help with that stitching of your quilt and how this is going to, next step that's going to be taken.
We have currently a plan document that we adopted in March of 2008 that's about 260 pages, depending on how it's codified. This is one page. This is the map of the plan. So basically this affects one page of those 270 pages. But it's probably the page that most people will recognize. It's the map. So the map right now has a lot of green in these towns, a lot of ag in these towns that haven't adopted plans, and there'll be more color. There'll be more residential and more commercial or non-residential, depending on the definitions. And so it'll affect that map and those three squares, if you will, that are those three towns.
So the ordinance that you bring back will be our approval of those three pages changing.
One page. Three sections of that page.
Okay. And that will be a process that keeps happening as more and more municipalities approve their maps.
Well, we hope to do it all at once.
Okay.
You approved seven resolutions last spring. These are three more. That's 10. Greenfield will be done, the town board chair assures me, by the end of December. So that'll be 11. The one town that hasn't done anything yet, I don't believe we'll wait for. But that's up to you. That's your policy decision. So we'll have 11 towns. All of the incorporated municipalities are done. Village of Bangor, we won't have that. I shouldn't say they're all done. The Village of Bangor is the only one that's not done. So we'll have 2 out of 18 municipalities that aren't done by the time we bring this ordinance amendment to you. It'll amend our plan for 16 of the 18 municipalities.
Thank you.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These maps are totally useless, printed in black on green. Is there a place where we can see them in color so that the code will mean something?
Sure.
Because this doesn't mean anything.
There's about, you can go to each town's individual website, and the map will be there. You can go to the comprehensive plan website on the county page. The plans will be there. There's a local link on the county's front page. And under the local link, you'll see the municipality. The plans will be there. If you want to see a printed copy, you can come to my office anytime or call me anytime, and I will get you a printed copy. I could possibly even email you a PDF of the picture of the document. So if you need any of that stuff, feel free to just give me a call, and I'll get it to you some way, shape, or form.
Any other questions or discussion? Mr. Bina.
Well, that exactly was my question too. I would suggest you get a new printer because with the schematic recommendations on the bottom, you can't tell anything except black and white on this. And maybe that was what you planned on doing, but it would have been nice to have a colorful map.
What I expected was if anybody really had any serious questions, they would have contacted me. That's what I expected.
Well, I didn't have any questions until we got the packet in the mail yesterday when I picked it up.
When did you see this resolution first, Don?
Oh, it came through committee, but it would have been nice to have it would have been nice to have a colorful map rather than this black and white ones. But
I agree.
He told you that these have a lot of green. They have a lot of green. Well, I don't understand what the question is. All right. Any other discussion?
On Bangor only?
We're voting on Bangor only at this point. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. The next one is who?
Farmington.
Town of Farmington is second by Leon Paff on that one. Discussion or questions on the Farmington map? All right. Any further discussion on the Farmington map? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Next is the town of Hamilton map. Who wants to second that one? Seconded by Mr. Montai. Discussion or questions on the Hamilton map? Seeing none, all in favor of that one say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That's it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it.
Thank you, sir. Executive Committee, Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have first item 12-34, which is first consideration of an ordinance to amend subsections A and B of section 2.04, parent 10, parent B, chapter 2, Code of Ethics of the General Code of La Crosse County regarding the Ethics Board. I would draw supervisors' attention to the copy of the ordinance that was on your desk. There were changes made in executive committee on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever, one day previous in this week. So that's the document that we all should be looking at. So I move this as its first reading and ask that we vote on it next month.
This will be held over for 30 days. Pardon?
Are we wanting to talk about it?
Unless anybody has any discussion today. Maureen Friedland.
Well, I just want to ask a couple questions that will help me through the month as I think about this. The first question is, if an ethics complaint is brought against me or you, more likely you because you have so many more official jobs and tasks and so forth that you need to do, am I going to be on my own to get my own counsel, or are there situations where an attorney will be provided for me, corp counsel will be available, or somebody else? Am I always on my own, or not necessarily?
I don't let Bill answer that.
Well,
because if I give the wrong answer, you'll file an ethics complaint against me.
According to the ethics code, our responsibility is to represent the ethics board. We can't represent both parties, both the ethics board and an accused. So I guess it would ultimately be up to the board as to whether to pay for counsel to represent you.
So if I'm doing something in my official capacity as opposed to, say, you know, some business dealing I have on the side or something, it is possible that an attorney might be authorized to represent me?
That would be a board decision. You could bring that request before the board, and the board could vote to say somebody filed a complaint against you today and you wanted to get an attorney right away. There wouldn't be time for the board to take a vote on it, so maybe you retain that person and you come into the board after the fact and say, hey, it cost me X amount of dollars. Will the county take care of this because it was in my official capacity? County board could say yes. County board could say no.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what my personal responsibility might be. Okay. And then the other question that I have is if a complainant files an ethics charge and it's deemed frivolous, or a recommendation is made that it's frivolous, what kind of review of that decision would be made? Does it go to circuit court? How does it get to circuit court? Who reviews it? Would the county board be the only body available to review this, or would there be some other more judicial authority available to review?
Mr. Shepard.
With the way that the ordinance is proposed by the executive committee, if the party that feels that the award is not correct, is arbitrary, capricious, beyond the authority of the ethics board, your remedy would be by writ of certiorari to circuit court.
That, by the way, would be the remedy if you don't like the outcome, period. Setting aside the award of costs, if they found that you were unethical and you say, I think they're wrong, same thing, right?
Right. That would just be a review of the record.
Okay, so it isn't just the county board available. That's kind of an optional thing that's going in. There is a review process.
You would have a right to go to,
okay,
to court. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Geary.
Well, Maureen brought up a good point about, is there certain circumstances where the county would pay for somebody's attorney? I think we should have some clear-cut guidelines. I mean, Bill or somebody you got to meet this criteria to qualify to even ask or something, because I'm looking around the room. I'm thinking, well, maybe Maureen's got a problem. We'll help her out. And I'm looking at Ray Ebert. Same situation. And I'm thinking, are we paying for Ray's? Come on. I think we got to get this narrowed down a little bit. If the county's going to step in, it's more of a political decision than one based on a factual criteria, depending on who's bringing it in.
You know, I think you're absolutely right, but I don't know that there's any way around that. How do you establish criteria?
I don't know. The corp counsel look that up and maybe give us some guidelines where you've got to meet some kind of, you know, standards or minimums. Otherwise,
outside of the ethics realm, in circuit court, if a board member is sued in his or her official capacity, corp counsel or our insurance will cover that, as they are right now for that one that's filed against me as county board chair and against Judge Damon and the Court of Appeals and our clerk of court and one of her staff people and three or four attorneys. There's one that is very clearly frivolous. Margaret in my office was served with those papers the other day. We sent them down to Bill. Now WMIC's handling that. That's an automatic. If anybody would have that kind of thing happen to you, that coverage is there. When it comes to the ethics rules, the problem is our statutes, our ordinance already says corp counsel's taken. They're covering or they're representing the ethics board. Joe.
Thank you. I recall there have been a few people in the state assembly and in the state senate who were in trouble for violating some campaign-related statutes, and they were given counsel through they hired private counsel who were reimbursed by the state, and that was for criminal activity, which surprised a lot of people, I think, that they got attorneys paid for up to a certain point, and then they were cut off. Maybe corp counsel can find out what they use for their standards for allowing attorneys in that circumstance. I'm not saying that's a good idea because I was shocked that they actually got attorneys for that who were reimbursed. It was kind of a nice thing for them, but might be some guideline that we could utilize. But I think it's got to be a judgment call by the board probably.
Bill?
Well, I can tell you that under our liability insurance policy, there will be coverage if one acts within the scope of their duties. Probably if there's a violation of the ethics code, by definition, you've acted outside of the scope of your duties. If you're found, you know, to be not guilty or that you didn't violate the ethics code, you know, it could be that you, it then could be presumed that you were acting within the scope of your duties. So I don't know about the state situation, but, you know, that's generally the standard that we look at in terms of coverage. But in some cases, and we had an employee that certainly acted outside of the scope of their duties, but our policy is providing them with a legal defense, although they won't be covered if their damage is assessed. So it's really fact intensive, and it's difficult to judge other than by that general standard of have you acted within the scope.
Mr. Mina.
I guess I didn't vote for this when it came through because it was too vague. Who are the people who can declare this any claim on a lawsuit as frivolous? Is it the ethics committee or is it the county board chair?
No, it'd be the ethics committee, but it's not a lawsuit. It's an ethics claim.
If they bring a claim.
An ethics claim, it would be the three people on the ethics committee.
So they'd be the only ones that could
right.
Who else?
The accused can also provide notice to the party bringing the complaint that the accused is taking a position that the complaint is frivolous.
But the accused doesn't make the decision.
No, the accused does not make the decision.
They may make that allegation that's frivolous. It's the ethics committee, though, that makes the determination.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So there is that distinction. Sure. Yeah. But I thought your question was who could bring it. The ethics board, clearly, yes.
Yeah. Jeff Schrader, did I see your hand up?
Yes, sir. That question brings me to number four, I think it is, on the second page. Under hearings, it says, if the ethics board finds that probable cause exists for believing that the allegations of the complaint, the ethics boards may issue an order setting a date for the hearing, blah, 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 blah. Why do we need to go any farther than that with this ordinance? They're the ones that are the determining factor. Why do we have to go any farther? They're the ones that are going to determine that it's frivolous, so why do we have to go any farther than that?
Bill, do you follow his question? I'm not sure I do.
Isn't this just showing what the ordinance will look like? So it's the whole ordinance. When he's looking at number four, the change in the ordinance is just this one page.
Yeah, the changes are what's underlined.
Number four has been in the ordinance for some time. It certainly, the ethics board may dismiss a complaint early on if it's totally frivolous, but the accused could incur attorney's fees as a result of that. So it's not always, such a complaint is not always dismissed at an early stage, and attorney's fees can be incurred by the person who is accused.
Vicki Burke? Joe Veenstra? Any other questions or comments? Mr. Ebert?
So am I to understand that there is no limit on the amount of, other than reasonable fees, on the amount that two people can assess? Two of the three people on the ethics board could assess a fee, as long as it's reasonable, into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Is that correct?
I mean, usually what is done by administrative law judges in determining attorneys' fees to their reasonableness is to look at the community and get an idea from practicing attorneys what is charged in that community. I think that typically attorneys' fees charged in La Crosse are probably different than what is charged in Milwaukee or Chicago or some other place. So I think that there is some discretion in the ethics board, but it has to be based on some community standard.
Okay, yeah, and that's why I thought we should put a fee in, maybe $5,000 too low, but I mean, to me, it's going to be a discouragement for someone to bring something against the powerful. And as public officials, we're powerful, some more than others. But that's why I think there should be some sort of a fee, $5,000, $10,000, something, certainly enough to deter someone from doing a frivolous suit, but not so much as to make it where they're just going to make them afraid. So thank you.
Other questions or discussion? Okay, this will be held over for 30 days. We'll take that up again in January. Next item, Ms.
Johnson. Item 12-35 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding modification of reporting requirements for certain human services purchase of service contracted vendors. Whereas Resolution 48-703 set forth a reporting requirement for all human services purchase of service contracted vendors paid between $25,000 and $75,000 per year. And whereas the specific reporting requirement was that these vendors are required to submit an annual income and expense statement. And whereas the Human Services Department has had difficulty in obtaining consistent and reliable financial statements from these respective vendors, and whereas Human Services has no assurance that a statement of income and expense prepared by a vendor is correct because there is no outside party compiling the statement, now therefore be it resolved that Human Services purchase of service contracted vendors paid between $25,000 and $75,000 per year, upon request by Human Services, will be required to submit an annual tax return and or other specific financial data compiled by a third party. Fiscal note is there's no cost to La Crosse County. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, seconded by Sharon Hampson. Discussion or questions? Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. How did you come up with those numbers, whoever wrote this? Why was it?
Gary Engelson.
$75,000.
Gary will answer that.
Let me give you a little background information. The resolution reference, the earlier resolution reference was from 2003. And prior to 2003, all contracts that Human Services issued for services where there was state money involved required an audit of those specific vendors. However, it was determined that for smaller mom-and-pop vendors, that hiring an audit firm to do an audit of a small company or small business was too high of a cost for them. So we requested a waiver from the state, and the state granted these dollar limits, that any of the vendors between 25 and 75, we would require an income statement form. So I guess an easy answer to your question is the state established the guideline.
So that nobody has to provide it if it's over 75,000?
Oh, yes. Yeah, anything over, say, any business that provide services to human services involving state funds has to have an audit by a CPA firm.
Other discussion, Mr. Ebert?
Okay, so I understand the purpose. Did we get input from the vendors on when you start giving tax returns out, you're giving some real information. And did anyone talk to any of these vendors that would be affected?
Not to my knowledge, no.
I would like to make a motion we move for 30 days on this and get some input from vendors before we start slapping this on.
Mr. Ebert makes a motion to hold over for 30 days. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Geary. Discussion on holding over for 30 days. Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, again, I can't believe that we don't go and ask folks what effect it's going to have on them. How many vendors do we have in this area?
I honestly don't know how many. 400? Okay.
Would there be some irreparable harm of putting this off for 30 days? Is there some deadlines or something that would really cause a problem to?
I do not believe so.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Geary.
My question would be, in this area, we have some sole source vendors?
Possibly
a sole source. Yes. And I'm saying if we get an audited return and they're making a pretty hefty rate of return, are we going to use that in the next go-round to negotiate a better price,
source? Let me explain again the rationale or the reason why we want financial information from these vendors. First of all, we want a vendor that's viable business, a going concern. I mean, we oftentimes have multiple-year contracts with these vendors. We want to ensure that we're doing business with somebody that is going to stay in business. The other side of the coin is probably about 7-8 years ago, we had one particular vendor that was making excessive profits, and the state does not want that to happen. So, we want to try to be able to identify those vendors that are providing a valuable service and making a reasonable profit.
Okay, by reasonable profit, do they have a percentage set? You can't make over 12% or 10%, or does the state have some guideline there? What do they call excessive?
I don't know offhand, Mr. Geary, if they have anything specific. All I remember is the one case from a few years ago whereby the state. I don't know if there's a specific guideline set.
Well, if we have 30 days, maybe you could make a call, see if you can kind of see if they got some kind of criteria they go by. Otherwise, my point was, I understand we want to deal with viable companies, but I didn't know if this would be used against them at some point in time by us. You know, if the state didn't think it was excessive, mm-hmm. but we did on the next contract,
Well, certainly if the state has guidelines, I don't recall that they had a set dollar amount or a set percent, but certainly if the state does have guidelines, La Crosse County would follow those guidelines. Yes.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this is that the Human Services Department contracts with several hundred vendors, mostly for services to the people that come in to Human Services and need services. Many of them are very small. They're just a family, like a foster family. Some of them are counseling places. And in the past, we've had some of those businesses go out of business, which then leaves our customers without service. So we're trying to keep track of each business's continued economic viability, not for any reason to use the economic information against them, but to make sure that we have a continuation of services for our customers. So I think it's not going to hurt to put it off for 30 days, but there's no ulterior motive here. There's nothing about it except that we want to make sure. And what we've been asking them to provide has varied from business to business, so we can't really tell. So we're looking for a consistent statement put together by a third party, and tax returns was the simplest one. So that's the reason that we're asking for this.
Audrey Cotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against referral because this is something that do we really need to go over it again in a month's time? My recollection when I served on the Human Services Board is that there are so many of the vendors are that we contract with are people who hire additional employees to do the work, daycare providers and the like. And so part of it certainly is that they are viable businesses, but also the fact that they're not taking excessive profit at the expense of the people who are the workers who are actually doing the work. And one thing I note in the resolution is that it is, it's not requiring an audit, it's requiring a report or a review by a third party. So that it doesn't seem to me that it is anything that anybody who is doing business within that scope, I mean, 25 to 75,000 is fairly significant to a small business. And so I just urge us to turn down referral and get on with the business. Thank you.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along that same line, if this is part of the requirements that are disclosed, those businesses that have a strong objection or are unwilling to do this would not be part of the group that would submit their proposal to be a vendor in the first place. So I think they would weed themselves out in that manner.
Joe Bilskemper. Ray Ebert.
Would that information become public record then?
Mr. Shepard?
It's possible.
Whoa.
Yeah, thank you.
Gary?
I want to mention further in regard to the case that we had several years ago whereby a vendor was making excessive profits. We had done business with that company for quite some time. It was discovered that they were making excess profits, and the state at one point in time when they first discovered it, they wanted the county to be responsible for the money that was paid over and above what they thought was excessive. So, I mean, with the La Crosse County taxpayer could be on a hook if the state comes back and says, you've been paying this vendor excessive profits for many years, and it's going to come out of your pocket, La Crosse County.
Further discussion, Mr. Bina.
Two things. I sat on Human Services for a long time, too. And we have a lot of mom-and-pop vendors out there who are foster families. And in some cases, they have one, two, three, and four kids, and that would add up pretty fast. Now, if I were one of those families in foster care and I made $25,000 or more, you're asking me to supply you with my income and loss statement for my personal, I hope not, business, as well as whatever I'm doing for the county. I think you're going to have a problem if you're going to be asking me to submit you my financial statement for the whole family, and that might include some of the kids who have income too, because you then are going to say, they're going to tell you, you go get lost, because we're not going to give you our financial statement. Because, you know, when Sharon talked about 400, you're not talking about only businesses. Now, granted, some of the businesses, the health care system, has got a lot of businesses. There's nonprofit organizations out there that become nonprofit, and you're asking for their, but you're also asking for my personal financial situation, and you're going to run into a problem with the families, I think, in foster care.
Any further discussion? Red Conkle.
Just a reminder, this is by request, so it's not, we're not going out to every vendor and saying, hey, you need to submit this annually. This is by request for this category, the $25,000 to $75,000 per year vendor. So it's not necessarily even collecting from every vendor, if I'm reading this correctly.
every vendor between that in that window, though. But yeah, not outside of that. Further discussion or questions? Gary?
I want to reemphasize, as Mr. Conkle just indicated, this would be by specific request. And as I wrote the resolution, you know, a tax return was just one possibility of what we would ask for. If we can get reliable financial data from a third party other than tax return, we would certainly request that.
Further discussion? Jill Billings.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand, Gary, what you said about upon request. It sounds like anyone who, any vendor who's paid between $25,000 and $75,000 a year, oh, I see, upon request of Human Services will be required. So it will depend on the specific vendor? So if there's a vendor that we're questioning, then we would ask that person, but not necessarily everybody who is between those dollar amounts?
Yes, that's correct.
Vicki Burke.
Aren't we just on the referral?
Well, we are, but the merits of the issue really are intertwined with the question of whether we should hold it over or not, so I've been pretty flexible on that one. I don't see how you can separate those. Any further discussion or questions? Roll call will be ordered. The issue is holding it over for 30 days. The question is holding it over for 30 days. If you want to hold it over for 30 days, vote yes. If you want to resolve it tonight, vote no. Margaret Wood and Audrey Cotter, have you voted? Close it out. We're going to revote. Yes, we're going to pretend this is Chicago. We're voting twice. Mr. Spiker?
I just have a question. It was a referral for 30 days to check with the vendors, right? Or was it just strict referral for 30?
Well, it was, he specifically said hold over for 30 days to check with the vendors.
Okay.
So that would be part of it as far as I would interpret his motion. All right, try again. If you want to hold it over for 30 days, vote yes. If you do not want to hold it over for 30 days, vote no. Thank you. Margaret, you can tell Linda how you will vote, and then she will keep it a secret till she gets up here. How's that? For the information of the board, we are working on a new voting system which should be operational shortly after the next election. It won't fix stupidity or things like that. Not that anybody tonight exercised stupidity. I want to say that. All right, and which way did Margaret vote? She voted no. Okay, so motion to hold over for 30 days has passed on a vote of 18 to 16. I would like that to go back to the executive committee, and I would like these questions, in addition to what Mr. Ebert raised. If it is a matter of public record, first of all, I'd like you to verify that. Is information like Social Security numbers accessible? If people get that public record, we can excise that. Secondly, I would like to know if there are any sort of claims that could be brought against the county for picking on a particular person, for example. I'd just like to make sure all of those kinds of things are looked at as part of this. And we'll bring it back to that in 30 days. It would. All right. Moving right along.
I have item 12-36 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. This also is new on your desk, not the one in your packet, for those of you who are referring to your packets right now. This is a resolution in support of the Midwest High-Speed Rail via the current Amtrak or Mississippi River Route, Chicago, Illinois to St. Paul, Minnesota, and commuter rail service from St. Paul, Minnesota to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Whereas the establishment of a Midwest regional high-speed rail system from Chicago to the Twin Cities has long been recognized by the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative to best be implemented by upgrading the existing Empire Builder Amtrak route crossing the Mississippi River at La Crosse, Wisconsin, and has been endorsed by the Wisconsin Freight and Rail Passenger Plan offered by the State of Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And whereas expansion of passenger rail will provide significant economic benefits to the citizens of Wisconsin and Minnesota, and competition for limited federal funding will be intense, so the requirement for a much higher capital investment to complete an Eau Claire plus La Crosse route could jeopardize our chances of receiving funding approval while splitting the initial frequency of trains between the two routes could diminish the economic viability of both. And whereas if a West Central Wisconsin route through Eau Claire were selected at the exclusion of the river route, this decision would undercut the local investments in current rail station depots, expend a greater share of the high-speed rail line cost in Wisconsin than Minnesota, at a higher expected cost per mile than enhancing the existing Empire Building line, and likely undermine the strong passenger demand that already exceeds the current frequency of one Amtrak train per day. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby go on record supporting the existing Empire Builder Amtrak route for Phase 2 connection of Midwest High-Speed Rail from Madison to St. Paul, Minnesota, while also supporting the extension of commuter rail service between St. Paul and Eau Claire, known as Eau Claire West, as the first step for serving western Wisconsin. Be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution will be sent to all elected representatives in Minnesota and Wisconsin along the proposed high-speed rail and commuter rail service routes, including state senators, representatives, county boards, and city councils. Fiscal note is there is no direct impact requiring the expenditure of La Crosse County funding. However, the economic benefits of enhancing passenger rail, as described, would be very positive. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, seconded by Jeff Schrader. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-37 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization of agency agreement between La Crosse County and Marshall and Isley Trust Company, N.A. Whereas per State of Wisconsin Administrative Code NR 500, La Crosse County is financially responsible for perpetual long-term care of its county-owned solid waste landfills. And whereas several years ago, the county decided to redevelop the old Sanitary County landfill, and during its redevelopment, a letter of credit for the Wisconsin DNR was in place in lieu of an escrow. The redevelopment has been completed, and the letter of credit for the Wisconsin DNR now needs to be replaced with a long-term care escrow for the site of the old landfill. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Chair is hereby authorized to enter into an agency agreement between La Crosse County and M&I Trust Company and is further authorized to identify from time to time those representatives of La Crosse County who are authorized to give directions and otherwise transact business with Marshall and Isley Trust Company. The fiscal note is $637,440 will be transferred to Marshall and Isley Trust Company, N.A., for long-term care of the specific location of the old landfill. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, seconded by Vicki Burke. Discussion or questions? Mr. Bina.
I guess I do have. Is this for the old landfill that's totally gone now?
Yes, that's correct. Keep in mind that where the old landfill was sitting,
yep,
the garbage got moved into the new landfill.
That's right.
But that site where it used to sit is still, we still are required to monitor that for 23 years.
Okay. Then in that case, we were planning on using that million or better money for our budgeting, and now we have to stick back into that $637,444. So we're not going to be able to use that money for balancing our budget in the next year, or we can't use it for road improvements because we have to take part of that. Is that the same money we're looking at?
Yes, it's the same money, but there was sufficient money. It was over $2 million.
Well, we used $1 million on roads last year. Mm-hmm. And another million this year?
Well, there. Yes, sir.
This was already taken into account in what the residual amount was. The $2 million was sufficient for both years of the roads. It did not take into account that the 637 still needed to be set aside. So it's already taken care of. The $2 million was over and above the 600,000.
Okay, so the 600,000 was from already the taken account we had
right
prior, and we'll just continue it there. And we still have to retain this for another 23 years?
That's
yes,
right.
No.
What are we doing with the new landfill then? Are we going to we're going to have to set up an account like this for the new one too? Or aren't we?
Well, keep in mind this, the 637,000.
Yeah.
We have to, by DNR's requirements, set this money aside and then we draw down on it annually. We draw down on it for groundwater monitoring, for land surface care,
yeah,
and for erosion repair.
I realize that. And years ago, we borrowed between $2 and $3 million because we hadn't established this escrow account, and we borrowed the money to put it into this account to establish the account.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're requiring us to retain that big of an amount for the landfill, even though it's gone.
Well, keep in mind that the garbage had resided there for many, many years. And
I would agree, the subsurface water. But
yeah,
I thought it would, we put the new landfill there and we could put an escrow account with the new landfill.
Well, no, keep in mind again that eventually we will probably expand into that old area. But as of right now, that old area is sitting bare, so to speak. But we have to monitor that groundwater area for 23 years.
So they haven't approached us on setting a new escrow account for the new landfill then yet? Because that will be coming then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I asked Bill to check the spelling, and he did on the computer. So if there is no objection, I'd like to change to correct the spelling of Marshall, and it's not Isley, it's Ilsley, I-L-S-L-E-Y, to add an L after the I. Is there any objection to correcting that? Okay, seeing none, that will be corrected. All right, Jeff Schrader.
What's the legalities of this? Does this mean we can't hold this in a special fund?
Yes, we hold it in a special fund. Sure, we hold it in an interest bearing fund.
We do that.
Keep in mind that the reason for this resolution is M&I Bank will be holding it in trust, and then we draw down from this account on an annual basis to care for the old site. Sure.
Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-38 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding designation of an official newspaper for 2010. Whereas La Crosse County Board Rule 2.02 Parent 6 per Wisconsin Statute Section 985 requires the designation of an official newspaper for La Crosse County, and whereas the La Crosse Tribune meets the qualifications per Wisconsin Statute 985.03, and whereas the current year designation by resolution terminates on December 31, 2009, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse Tribune is designated and approved by the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors as the official newspaper for La Crosse County for the year 2010, expiring December 31, 2010. Fiscal note is there is no fiscal impact. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Andrea Richmond. Discussion? Jeff Schrader.
Approximately how much does the county expend to La Crosse Tribune every year? Anybody got a clue?
Well, you'd have to pull that across various departments.
I don't know off the top of my head.
We'll ask Dick Mild to report on that next month.
Yes.
They don't think we spend enough. Probably.
I mean, if somebody wants to follow me up to my office after the meeting, I'll look it up in the computer.
Further questions or discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Johnson?
I'd really like to read 1237 again, saying Ilsley instead of Isley, but I'll forego that.
Thank you. Legislative Committee, Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item 12-39, two honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding opposition to federal initiative to replace the inland waterway diesel fuel tax with a lockage fee. Whereas the previous administrations and the current administration have proposed in their budgets to Congress to eliminate the inland waterway diesel fuel tax and replace it with a barge lockage fee as a means to fund the Inland Waterways Trust Fund, and whereas this type of fee structure would not be equitable for river traffic that does not use the lock and dam system and places an unfair burden for lock users to fund the entire inland waterway infrastructure program, and whereas the Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners has examined this issue and hereby requests that the Mayor of La Crosse and the La Crosse County Board Chair jointly send a letter to the President and its entire congressional delegation opposing the barge lockage fee proposal. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize the County Board Chair to send a letter jointly with the City of La Crosse Mayor to the President and the area's congressional representatives opposing the barge lockage fee proposal to fund the Inland Waterway Trust Fund. Fiscal note, no cost to La Crosse County. The Legislative Committee unanimously approved this. I move for its approval.
Moved by Ann Fisher, second by Don Meyer. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Fisher? Thank you very much. Public Works, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 12-40. These two next resolutions I shall read will accomplish three things: pay off the delinquent taxes, put on the tax roll the property, and put money in the county treasury.
We like you.
Approval of bid for City of La Crosse for sale of property 1728 Salem Road. Whereas La Crosse County has advertised for sale of parcel 17-10239016, located 1728 Salem Road, which property was subject to of a prior tax foreclosure action. Whereas the sale and appraised value of the real estate was first advertised by publication as required by law pursuant to a state statute 7569, Wisconsin statutes, and whereas a sealed bid was received and opened to the county treasurer and employee of the Zoning and Land Information Department on November 30th, 2009, and whereas the only responsible bid submitted was by the City of La Crosse for the sum of $24,000. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board hereby authorizes sale of Parcel 17102390 16 to the City of La Crosse for an amount of $24,000. Be it further resolved, the County Board Chair, County Clerk are authorized to execute a quitclaim deed and any other documents necessary to accomplish the sale of said property after approval by Corporation Counsel. Fiscal note, the revenue for the delinquent properties is first used to satisfy outstanding taxes and any cost of the sale, including any appraisal expense of $750. Count 1131-56015, sale of county property. Any remaining revenue is received into the current fiscal year in the Treasurer's Department. The unpaid general property taxes, special assessments, interest, and penalty total $4,524.20. Committee voted 7-0 to approve it. I move for approval, Mr.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Leon Paff. Any discussion? Ralph Geary.
Just a clarification. At the meeting, this bid is contingent on them getting an easement to get to the property from one of the neighbors, and at the present time they don't have it. So we won't get paid till they get an easement. If they don't get one, then, you know, we will still own it. It doesn't quite specify that.
Bill says he doesn't agree with you.
Huh?
Bill says he doesn't agree with you.
I thought that I asked that question at the meeting. Did something happen between last week and this week?
No, the appraised value was always based on getting a variance for building a residential house. And as I understand it, the city is likely to resolve the easement issues with the neighbors, but that's not what the value was determined on. It was contingent upon a variance being granted for a house.
No, that wasn't what I said. I said the city has to get that easement before we're going to get paid. If they don't, we're not going to get anything. We will own the property yet. That's what Larry Kirsch and I think the administrator was there, and isn't that the point I made? When they get the easement, then we get paid. And he said within 90 or 120 days or something, they're going to go to the board of, is it adjustment or appeals or something, and if they obtain it, we get paid. But if they don't, then we won't get, then they will.
Well, we don't give up property until we actually get paid for something, and they have to deal with it. If I remember correctly, there was a driveway that's actually on the property that they don't have a right to, shouldn't even be there. So there's interest on both sides to get it resolved. If we don't get paid, we don't give up the deed.
It's worded like it's a done deal, but it isn't a done deal till they get that resolved. And if they don't get it resolved, then we will still own it.
It's never a done deal until you get paid.
Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, just a quick question. Now, this I noticed we're getting $24,000, and the amount owed was $4,500 roughly. Seems in the past when the city's got it, haven't we given the property just for the amount that's owed in taxes and stuff? And if so, why is this different? And I'm glad we're doing this, but it just seems that in the past we did it the other way.
Mr. Spiropoulos?
The last one that we've sold the city was down on 9th Street, down by Lutheran Hospital. We sold that one to them for it was either the assessed value or the fair market value. So we've very seldom sold them property for just the outstanding taxes.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood. Is that the one in Mr. Brockmeyer's district?
I believe so. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? Mr. Veenstra, did you have your hand up? No. Oh, okay. On that note, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry, one no, Andrea Richmond. That carries.
Item 1241, approval of bids for sale of property. Whereas La Crosse County has advertised the sale of two separate parcels of property which were subject of a prior tax foreclosure action, and whereas the sale and appraised value of the real estate was first advertised by publication as required by law pursuant to a state statute 7569, Wisconsin stats. Whereas sealed bids were received and opened by facilities director and county treasurer on November 2nd, 2009. Whereas the responsible bids accepted by Public Works Infrastructure Committee are as follows. Parcel number 891-1, Harem Road. The name of the bidder was Paul Johnson. The amount was $53,000. The minimum bid to had to be in was $53,000. Item number two, parcel 111-48-3, Esther Hayes. Bid amount was $50. The minimum bid was $25, and we received a check in the mail from we don't know who it is or who it was. And it was rejected for the obvious reason. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the Lacrosse County Board hereby authorizes the sale of parcel 981-1 to Paul Johnson for the sum of $53,000 and parcel 111-48-3 to Esther Hayes for a sum of $50. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair, County Clerk are hereby authorized to execute quick claim deeds and any other documents necessary to accomplish the sale of said properties after approval by Corporation Council. Fiscal note, the revenue from the delinquent properties is first used to satisfy outstanding taxes and any cost of sale, including appraisal expenses of $750. Account 1131-55015, sale of county property. Any remaining revenue is received into the current fiscal year in the Treasury's Department. Total unpaid general property tax, special assessments, interest, and penalty for the parcel 891-1 totals $1,718.69. Committee approved at 7-0. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Arlene Benrode. Discussion. Ann Fisher.
I just don't understand. If you got a check, how could there be no name?
Was it a cashier's check?
A check?
Cashier's check?
When we go out for bids, we require a certified or cashier's check. And there was no physically no name on that check.
Wow, that's weird.
And no return address on the envelope?
No return address on the envelope. Nothing in the... There was no bid sheet.
Oh,
there was,
I remember
it was
that's
just a
mine.
Check.
Yeah, give it to Leon. All right. Any further discussion or questions on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Mr. Spiker? Thank you, sir. Items for future agendas. Anybody have any? Mr. Benninger.
Yeah, thank you. I might have been just a little short early on about that discussion about the assessments and valuations and stuff, you know, about, and it, I do get a little irritated, you know, the overlap between these meetings, but if you look
we noticed that.
If you look at our agenda, it says 2010 adopted budget document. That doesn't tell you anything. And this is of an important issue, and we could spend hours and hours on it, and it is complicated. But I think my point, one of my points is that I think the county administrator said, well, you're not hearing much in the city of Lacrosse because people taxes went down. And that's true. But that's just really only part of the story. You know, you have to take a look at neighborhood deterioration. You have to take a look at rental property. You have to take a look at stagnant housing, neighborhood situations. And that's the complexity of the issue. So it's a mixed blessing to have your taxes go down. Ideally, you know, you want your property values to go up. That's your nest egg for retirement or for sales or stuff like that. So it's a complex story. And I just didn't think we really had the opportunity. Maybe at another future meeting we could reopen that discussion.
Well, you know, in fact, Mr. Menninger, we do occasionally need some topics for these policy planning meetings. So I think that would be an excellent one.
And if I could just make one very short comment, you know, I appreciate that, the insight. One of the points that I hope the data makes is that if the city of La Crosse doesn't grow as fast as the other areas, county supervisors outside of La Crosse have a vested interest in the health and economic vitality of La Crosse. And in your own property tax bills tonight, you saw evidence of that. And I hope that point got across because that's part of the illustration is we're all in this together. And I hope that that gets across.
Ralph Geary.
Just to follow up, I forgot to ask one question earlier. Are we at the levy limits or right around them? Are we at budgeting? I mean, is our levy at the, about the state levy limits?
No, we actually, by the cut you made from the projected or the proposed budget to the final budget, you actually went below the levy limit because the latest levy limit rule allows you to carry that over to the next year.
Oh, okay.
So we're below the levy limit.
By?
By about $700,000 plus, which was the amount that you cut. We, however, do have the impact, and we'll do this at a policy planning meeting. The rate limit is looming for us as one of only 8 or 9 counties in the state, and we're actually working on that as well.
If you bring that topic up on some future meeting, bring that one in too, how that works out.
Mr. Spiropoulos.
Did everyone get a chance to sign up?
If not, as soon as we're done here, go over and get signed up. No, you'll be meeting. If you signed up for the jail tour, you're going to be meeting at the south end of the new garage that we built, behind D's, across there from Burger King. That's where you need to meet. Jeff Schrader.
Where do we park?
In the parking lot. Also, if you would, wear some decent shoes or boots. It is quite dirty inside and outside the building, so and dress warm. So.
All right. Any other items for future agendas? Mr. Kyle. Mr. Kyle moves to adjourn. Second by Arlene Benrood. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously.